Welcome to the Enabled Disabled Podcast. I'm your host, Gustavo Serafini. I was born with a rare physical disability called PFFD. My journey has been about self-acceptance, persistence, and adaptation. On the show, we'll explore how people experience disability, how the stories we tell ourselves can both enable and disable, how vulnerability is the foundation for strength, and why people with disabilities can contribute more than we imagine. I hope that leaders, companies, clinicians, families, and friends will better understand our capacity to contribute to the world and help enable us to improve it. Ryan Gebauer is an entrepreneur and realtor. He is the founder of the Ryan Realty Group in Coral Springs, Florida. Ryan's story is powerful. At 16, he injured his spine in an accident and is quadriplegic. Like all of our guests, this is not the whole story, nor does it define who Ryan is as a person. I encourage you to listen to Ryan's story of adaptation and strength. Thanks to a symbiotic relationship with technology, Ryan is thriving through his life journey and helping other people with disabilities find accessible real estate in South Florida. If you're enjoying the show, please share it with other people that you think will enjoy it too. Spreading the word about the work we're doing is a key component to our growth and sustainability. Thank you so much. All right, Ryan, thank you so much for being here. It's an honor. It's a privilege. I know Faye, my producer, met you at the Abilities Expo, and you have an incredible story, and you're doing a lot of exciting things that I'm really wanting to dive into. So can you tell us just a little bit about who you are? You know, just let's touch briefly on your disability experience.
Absolutely. So thank you for inviting me. It was just a fluke that I came across. I really didn't know if I was going to be able to attend all the virtual, but it's great that that was an opportunity that Abilities Expo had provided, because likely I wouldn't have traveled to go into the expo. Long and short of it is that with the virtual, I've been able to learn a lot more and meet individuals like yourself. Background on myself is I was not born with a disability. I was 16 years old, just completed my sophomore year in high school here in Coral Springs, Florida. With a group of friends, it was just something that we did. We were like the MTV Jackass guys. We just didn't have the cameras. We did all the goofy adrenaline rushing, out of not the norm type of stupid pranks and anything that in our case dealt with water. So I climbed up a tree about 36 feet up, and I leaped with the intentions to land in the canal, and I lost balance and did a belly flop, hit the water, and that's when I became a C3-4 complete quadriplegic. At the time, I knew somewhat of spinal cord injury because Christopher Reeve was injured about a month prior to me in 1995. I was June 95, he was May. So I learned and heard through news and watching, you know, Sports Center and, the news in regards to his injury. That's how I learned of spinal cord injury, because of him. So I knew at the time, but I also thought that life was over with. Rehab provided me with technology, with the sip and puff. Voice recognition wasn't really out there and where it is today, but I was taught the drag and dictate. This was all in prepping me to return back to high school. While I was in rehab, I thought that I was going to go home and it was probably better just to sit at home and do nothing, because how can someone at my level of injury be successful, be able to go out and about? Yes, I had a wheelchair. Yes, my family was going to purchase me a van, but you know, why would I want to go back to school? Because school equals education and education equals work, and why would I need to work, you know, with my disability? So thankfully for my parents, my father lighting the fire underneath me to say, you need to go back, you need to graduate, you need to pursue, you need to at least get into college, attempt, figure out what you want to do. And that just opened so many doors for me where I'm at today. So ultimately, it's been 26 years. Living in spinal cord injury, shoulder movement is my highest functioning level, my lowest functioning level that I can use, head and neck. But everything below that shoulder is my paralysis level, and I'm dependent on technology and my caregivers to assist me with my daily living as well as my independence.
So can you tell us a little bit more, Ryan? You said that your mother and your family were obviously a huge support structure, but as you started to make the effort and as you started to say, okay, I'm going to go back to high school, I'm going to graduate, you know, what did your adaptation look like? What did you start to pick up on and see a little bit differently than you were seeing before when you were basically ready to give up?
My parents, they created the foundation. And through the process of going back to high school, there was hurdles. And every step of the way, it was one, two, sometimes it felt like a million hurdles that were being thrown. And because the foundation that my parents had created of, you know, although I was in essence tied by the umbilical cord, so to speak, they kept pushing and pushing. They kept pushing to extend that umbilical cord. You know, as much as they knew they were there to help me and support me, if I ever needed to come back, you know, drag me back in. But the long and the short of it is that as they pushed me forward, I met others, and I met others through teachers, peer counseling teacher in high school, who said, you have a lot of opportunity, you can inspire others, continue doing what you're doing. So that helped me in the back of my head of, you know, continue moving forward. Friends that I never even thought that I would even hang out with prior to my injury became good friends and still are good friends today, even if that means, you know, Facebook or seeing them during the holidays. They became very great supporters. And then once I started volunteering, you know, it was an opportunity that was given to me to volunteer for Center for Independent Living back in 1998, 1999. That opened up doors of there's resources that are out there. Going back to not only high school, but completing high school, getting over that hurdle, and then going to college. And United States, our government, state of Florida, providing accessibility, providing scholarships, providing vocational rehabilitation to allow individuals with disabilities to go to school, to attempt, to do something that they have a passion for, that they like. So then that got me into school, and then it showed me all the different technologies, like the one I'm wearing right now, the head mouse. I never knew of it. I only knew of voice recognition. So every step that I went forward was someone else that I met, another organization, another entity that said, did you know about this? Did you know you can do this? Do you know you can take these resources and build upon the, you know, the initiative or the endeavor that you're focusing on? And that continues to this day to where I'm at. So my parents were the ones that started the foundation for me, kept me by that umbilical cord, pushed me forward. Today, I will say that umbilical cord is no longer there. My mother had passed away 14 years ago. My parents were divorced prior to that, obviously, but my father is still there when needed. If it's emotional support, he's certainly there. But I live independently with my sister and my nephew, and I, you know, when I need the help, I've got it. But I have other caregivers that are around me that help me do that and get me to where I I need to go. And I'm just part of great support group and great people, and meeting someone like yourself, and just trying to thrive and continue on, you know, doing the best that I can with what I have and being content with my lifestyle. And hopefully one day, you know, others could follow suit and understand that, you know, it's not just me, it's all of us, including yourself, that, you know, have that passion that they don't want to give up, that they can continue going forward. And it's just the resources that are out there and making sure that you can grab them and move forward with it.
That's amazing. I just have one question on, there's a lot of great, I want to go into the technology aspect of it too, but when you went into college, how accessible, like, were you commuting to and from home, or were you in the dorm rooms in college? Was the college that you went to really good about helping you with the things that you needed help with and giving you the freedom that you wanted as well? Like, did you feel comfortable? Did you feel accepted? Did you feel like this is a great, you know, learning opportunity here? What was that college experience like? Or what were the hurdles there too?
So to rewind a little bit, when I returned to high school, Broward County provided me with an occupational therapist and a physical therapist. And mostly with the occupational therapist, they wanted to make sure that each of the rooms that I was assigned to for the class, that there was enough room for me to get in and out with my wheelchair. So that was a step that I learned, that this was something that I needed to understand moving forward in education. They also provided me with technology. So I had a laptop with Dragon Dictate software, and that's how I did my schooling. When I went to community college, I started at Broward Community College, which is Broward College today, first, because I didn't want to just jump into the university. I still wanted to be a transit student from home to school. I didn't want to live on campus. When attending BCC, Broward Community College, there were volunteers from each of my classes that would volunteer to be a note taker. The disability office provided technologies as well as separate rooms for testing. So they provided resources that allowed extended time, or if I needed a lab person to come with me to do labs or research at the library, they provided those resources. When I graduated BCC and went to Florida Atlantic University is where I got my undergrad, as well as grad school for the master's in business program. There was more resources at the university level that they could actually pay note takers to come to my class, take notes, as well as be a lab assistant or a library researcher. All classes that I attended through 90% of my undergrad and grad school were in person, were in attendance. Because when I started college, it was in 1998. By the time I finished undergrad, it was 2004. By the time I started grad, it was 2005. And by the time I ended and graduated grad school, it was 2008. So we weren't really doing a lot of virtual as we are today. And we were not doing a lot of internet courses. But I will say I did take a couple of them at the tail end of my grad school, which that was a whole nother concept, that providing books. Books had to be put on PDF for me. Either way, each high school, community college, and university, there was someone that was in charge making sure that I had the resources, technology, that I had the accommodations, the classrooms, and that I was provided with all equal access, and that I was given the same amount of equal time, if not maybe a little bit more was needed, because I had to tell someone to use a calculator of computations rather than me doing it myself. So I got time and a half, but everything was given to me to help assist with learning, as well as, you know, accomplishing the tests and the assignments. And as years have passed, technology has also become so much better, especially with the voice recognition stuff. But I haven't been in school since 2008. So I'm sure there's a lot more resources that are given to current students today.
That's impressive, though, to know that. And the work ethic, the desire, right, the internal motivation, all really important things that helped you thrive. You've mentioned technology a bunch of times now, so can you talk a little bit about your relationship with technology? What are some of the most important technologies for you for daily living that you really are important to you, that help you do what you want to do?
So I'll give you a comparison. So when I was in rehab, prior to my injury, my family never owned a computer. We had every Encyclopedia Britannica that you can possibly imagine, and library. You know, that's where research was done, and typewriter is how basically anything was typed out if it wasn't handwritten. So we didn't own a computer when I was injured. When I was in rehab, I was taught how to use a computer, which was something I had to overcome. You know, one, learning how to use a computer. Two, to not do it the norm, which is a keyboard and a mouse, but using voice was another challenge that I had to learn. Technology then, speaking to voice recognition, sound like this. So there's pauses between words. As today, as we're speaking to Google or Siri or speech to text, we speak in a manner as I'm speaking right now and answering your question. So we've improved significantly. When I was in rehab and giving the opportunity to use the voice recognition, once I was at home, I continued to use that all the way up until 2008. I was using all voice recognition through my computer. Now, at home, I had what's called an environmental control unit, an ECU, and it was a company by the name of Quartet. And Quartet, similar to my sip and puff straw that I used to drive my wheelchair, had a microphone that came around in front of my face. And you, training, would record three commands. If I had a runny nose, or if I was under weather a little bit, it really didn't work as great. If the microphone was here and then I'm over here, it didn't work as great either. So to be able to run the house of electrical components like the lights, the ceiling fan, the door opener was great because it allowed me to feel independent. Fast forwarding, 2008, when I started to work after grad school, it was very difficult to use the voice recognition and be able to be on the phone because the commands for the voice recognition were wake up, go to sleep. So as I'm here now answering your question, I'd have to have it in a sleep mode. But if it heard something, like the command I just said, wake up, it would start typing everything out in front of me and I would have to say, go to sleep. Now, if I'm on the phone with someone that doesn't know that I have a disability and I say, hold on a second, go to sleep, I'm being questioned, why are you telling me to go to sleep? No, I'm not telling you to go to sleep, I'm telling my computer to go to sleep. In 2009, who was speaking to the computer? Yeah. You know, we all weren't speaking to our computer. So I'm going to ask the question, you're speaking to your computer. What are you talking to? What are you doing? Who are you? So I had to learn other technologies, and that's what led me to the head mouse. So I use that today. So I can be on the phone with anybody. They have no idea that I even have a disability. Not that people pick up the phone and ask if you have a disability to begin with, but it seems like a natural, a true conversation when those conversations happen. Now, there are many people that I work with that know I have a disability, I understand, but they'll ask me, like, oh, do you want me to email you? Or, no, I got it. I can type it. I'm doing it right now as we speak. Or, how are you doing that? So they're quite amazed that that's happening. So the technology that I'm using right now, I can actually be typing something as I'm speaking to you. You would obviously see it because we're on video, but if it was just audio, you would have no idea what I was doing. When it comes to the home automation aspect of it, that environmental control unit from Quartet, I no longer use. Alexa has replaced that. And I don't want to say that command too much because things will start to work here. But when I use the commands, today I open the garage door, close it, open the kitchen door that leads to the garage door, close it. Well, that closes automatically. Lights, fans, AC, the thermostat, HVAC, which is the heat, and, ventilation, AC, the camera, the Ring doorbell, because I have the Echo.
Yeah, you can show. you can even control TVs and cable boxes and
So what I'm wearing right now are the glasses, so I can drive around the area. I can be in my and down the street, have my cell phone on me, make phone calls. You know, ask it to open a door, close the door. What's the thermostat set at? Tell me my text messages right on my glasses. When I'm in my van, I have the Echo Auto. I can have it open the garage door before I even get to the garage. I don't drive, but someone's driving with me. You know, when I'm in bed, I can have the fan on and off, the AC on and off, the space heater when we are cold here in South Florida, you know, turn on and off. I can control everything with voice. So it's made my life, my quality of life, so much more better since the simple voice recognition of Dragon Dictate and the Quartet environmental control unit.
That's incredible. And so the glasses that you're wearing are basically tied to the Alexa?
So the glasses are her. Okay. The silver dot here, mm-hmm. the silver square, is I have an infrared in front of me, and when I move, the mouse follows.
I see.
So I just basically took the sticker and stuck it on the glasses.
Gotcha. Okay. That's the power of technology is an incredible thing. And so my question for you, I want to dive into is, what got you into real estate?
So when I was in grad school, or prior to grad school, I had an opportunity to take a real estate class for business, which would have used as a elective credit. So I decided, as I was waiting to get accepted to grad school after all my testing, is I just took a summer course with intentions of using it for credit. And I thought real estate was interesting. My father was a real estate agent well before I was born. My father was also into interior design after I was born. So housing, in essence, was around me in the business world on my dad's part. So I said, yeah, let me take the class. I'll get credit for it, you know, down the road. And I was watching also Flip This House, which was in South Carolina at the time, on A&E. And I thought it was really cool. So I had an interest in it, but I had no intentions I was really going to do anything with it. When I was in the class, the professor had said that to all of us, if you pass the course, you can take the state exam. So I figured, might as well. I mean, two for one, basically paying for it, which I did. As I got into grad school and I started to become more involved with disability organizations and volunteering, I started to begin to see that individuals with disabilities, especially seniors, 50 or older, were having a difficult time finding the needs. Now, I'm not talking an average 50-year-old that, you know, could be playing pickleball or playing racquetball. I'm talking a 50-year-old that needs to use like a rollator or a walker, that needs to use some type of equipment for the accessibility and getting them around.
Okay.
Especially from around their own living environment. And a lot of that, when it comes to the physical aspect, especially the wheelchairs, or those who use walkers, rollators, it's space. They need the proper space. So as I started to realize that some of the members of the support group that I was involved with were trying to just find basic rentals, you know, rentals that they can get into a bathroom. Building code didn't change until the 90s here in Florida because the ADA helped change the building code. But residential does not fall underneath ADA. So the challenge is that when someone was looking for a rental on a fixed income is that, yes, they can get through the front door, and likely is they can get into the master bedroom. But from the master bedroom into the bathroom, you're talking a 20-inch door when their wheelchair could be 30 inches wide, you know, at the widest point. Or they're a paraplegic and they would like to get into the bathroom, but the way that the bathroom was arranged. So with my ability to see angles, 90-degree angles and turning, and the radius, as well as someone in a wheelchair, because it's all based on the individual needs. You can't just take yourself and myself and everyone in a wheelchair and say, hey, every one of you are going to work in this environment. And we all have needs that are going to be different from each other. My chair is a very long base, so I'm going to need a lot of room, you know, when it comes to turning and the turning radius compared to someone that's in a smaller base wheelchair. They can do, you know, 90 degrees, you know, on a dime. So I was able to use that ability to see what would work and what wouldn't work. And as I started to gain more knowledge, I understood that this was a market that wasn't being met. It was a niche that I knew that I could get involved with. And I did so. So I started working for a very large brokerage, national brokerage. And as I started to progress, my intentions were fully disabled and senior. But then I started working with a lot of able-bodied individuals that had no disabilities. So then there was another challenge there of, okay, well, now not only do I want to learn the real estate part of it, but I'm now just, you know, your normal agent. You know, they're using me because they want to use me, not because they're disabled. So I had to get over that little bit of internal challenge for me. But as I started to see that I can do this for anybody and that anyone can do this, I really started to enjoy learning that, can I sell a two-story home and be in a wheelchair? Absolutely. Technology helps with that. So figuring those challenges and overcoming allowed me to really progress and want to do more. So I decided to go on my own and create my own brokerage because I was able to do the things that I wanted to do. And I had a lot more flexibility and able to then also be considered a minority business owner. Because working for a brokerage, I'm an independent contractor. But being the broker, I'm a minority business owner because of my disability. So that helped me as well. And I started to see things grow, started to see more individuals that wanted to be involved. I currently have two great sales associates who have been licensed longer than I've been born, or actually been alive. They're licensed in the mid-70s, a few years before I was ever born. So they have way more experience than I do when it comes to real estate, but they want to be able to help the senior segment. I have a gentleman who's a paraplegic and who's a good friend of mine that wanted to be involved, as well as a friend's father who is also a senior. But they felt comfortable by working with me because I felt that there was the niche that they also liked, which was basically seniors or disabled, and thought that it was a really interesting concept and wanted to, you know, hang their license, so to speak. So that's where I'm at today. And I'm not against anybody working with me. And, you know, I don't care what color you are or what disability you have. I think we all have the equal right of doing what we want to do. And if you want to be a real estate agent, by all means, I tell everyone, I mean, you may not go and sell that million and, you know, million-dollar mansion, but at least you get an education so you can understand when it comes that time for you to purchase something that you have that education, just as I do.
Absolutely. I would imagine too, Ryan, that when you are meeting with clients and you are on your, you know, it's your own business now, like I have my own business too, there's a sense in which, you know,
the clients choose you, but we choose the clients too. So we get the ability to say, no, I really want to work with this person. I want to earn this person's trust. This person is going to see that there's probably advantages too, big advantages for how you see things, whether they have a disability or not. Maybe they have a family member who is, maybe they have friends who are, maybe they're going to say, you know, Ryan's going to see things in a different way, and it's going to be advantageous for me when I'm analyzing this property and whether I want to buy it or not.
No, yeah, it's very true. It's very true. And I think because anyone that has a disability, for the real estate aspect of it, but anyone that has a disability, I've realized by just going to a grocery store, I have had many, many older gentlemen, and the likelihood is they were in, you know, some type of service, and I mean, they were a serviceman of some type of branch. And I could tell that because usually they got the WW2 hat on or the Vietnam hat on. But their assumption is that I was a veteran. So they'll come over and be like, hey, buddy, keep up the good work. Thanks for being there for our country. You know, we're all here for each other. I was never a veteran. I was 16 years old. I jumped out of a tree into a canal. I sustained my own injury. I did not fight for our country. But what his notion is that in his mind is that someone that's in a wheelchair like myself, that those are in wheelchairs are veterans. And he is acknowledging that he's glad to see me at the grocery store rather than stuck at home or in a nursing home. Go beyond that mindset. But when someone I come in contact with and I speak with and they find out, like, I could be shown a property, for example, and I could be waiting for a client, or I could be at a 55 older community. And I've had this happen multiple times. And a lady comes up to me and says, well, you need to go over to the clubhouse because they will help you get in to the unit. And I said, ma'am, I'm a real estate broker. I have access to the unit. I'm just waiting. And her eyes light up like, you? And I'm like, yeah, me. Yes, I'm in a wheelchair. I understand that. But to her, it's a surprise. And then the other portion of it is people are inspired. They're inspired by seeing those that are in wheelchairs, that are playing wheelchair rugby, wheelchair basketball. You're starting to see Target with individuals in wheelchairs on their commercials. This is an inspiration to our community, that you can go out and be competitive and go out and work and be part of society. And there are companies and businesses and people that want to be accepting and want you to represent them and be their realtor or their insurance agent or their cashier at a Target, you know? And that's the great thing about seeing it is people want to choose you because they're inspired by us, choose us, because they're inspired by that we are not giving up and that we're continuing to thrive in life.
Absolutely. And those are three very different mindsets. The military one is interesting because I hadn't heard that one before. And that's really intriguing because I tend to think of that as a healthier way of looking at it, as opposed to surprise that somebody with a disability is doing something, right? So the fact that it's like, whether you were injured or not fighting for the country doesn't really matter. But the fact that you are there at the grocery store showing up, the fact that you are living your life, the fact that you are thriving, it's an acknowledgement of that, and that feels good.
Yes, and it also feels good that he's willing to come up to me and he takes his hand with a big old grip and grab, and I feel my shoulder. And they just smack right on my shoulder, gives that big old grab, and I've had this multiple times happen. And it's really an awesome feeling because I know I'm not a veteran. He was. He fought for our country. He fought for me to be there in that grocery store.
It's incredible. What are some of the things, Ryan, that you would like to see changed in the real estate market, right? Where the ADA doesn't have an effect. Like, what are some of the simple things that architects, designers, if you're remodeling a home, like what are some of the easiest things that we can do to make homes more accessible, or to think like with a more universal design in mind when we make something? Like,
you just nailed it. Universal design. Universal design is the best concept ever put together. For the fact that when I'm speaking to real estate, I'm only speaking because of my experience in South Florida. You know, there are other areas of the country that have a lot of rural areas and have a lot of development and have the land to do so. Here in South Florida, land is scarce. And if you can get a hold of land, which means downtown Fort Lauderdale, you knock down, you know, 20 homes and you build a 30-story building, that's great. You know, they're going to follow, you know, the new building code. They're going to likely you know, have a lot of amenities that are accessible, especially getting into the rooms. You know, if it's a card or a movie theater that's on premises. But when it comes to the individual units, bathtubs, you know, for me, I don't need a bathtub. Rolling shower is what I need. But that doesn't mean that everyone needs that roll-in shower look. So if you add a bench to a shower that you can roll a wheelchair into and not have any barrier that's going to prevent you from rolling a wheelchair into, which is those the water barriers to prevent the water from going to the toilet or bathroom. I totally understand why they do it. The wider doorways, those 90-degree turns, they're not easy for everyone. When it comes to land now, we're seeing a lot more land being purchased and two-story homes or townhouses filling in those spaces. If that's the case, then we need to start looking at two master bedrooms, one on the first floor that has accessibility and one on the second floor. Because not everyone that has a spinal cord injury, which I do, spinal cord injury doesn't discriminate. So for someone that may live in a townhouse, you know, if their bedrooms are on the second floor and all of a sudden they're circumvented by a disability or a spinal cord injury and now they have to return home, where do they return home? The problem that I experience the most is that when a builder builds multifamily, which is five or more units, they're not taking into consideration to the accessibility factors of it. And they're just squeezing everything together as much as possible to follow the building code, but it's not leaving room, especially for those that maybe in their 40s and 50s, may need to start using a wheelchair, power chair, or even a rollator, a walker, that they've got these extra barriers. And universal design plays a key role. If we can design and make these features universal for all, equal access, it allows so many more opportunities for those with and without disabilities at the time to provide better housing.
And what do you think we can do, you know, as real estate professional, as you know, my company that is in the home technology space, what can we do? How can we help, you know, spread the word to those architects and to those builders and help get them trained? Like, what organizations are out there that are helping them get trained on universal design? You know, I'm not sure. So
that's what I'm not aware of any and I might be wrong. I might just be foolish that I don't, or oblivious that it even exists. I mean, I know that architects learn ADA because they obviously have to, you know, design, and I know general contractors have to know ADA because in order to build it. But a lot of the general contractors are focused more on the commercial because that's where ADA is.
Yep.
The only thing close to ADA in residential is multifamily, but the multifamily aspect of it is the common area, which means like the pool, the clubhouse, the parking lot. Each unit doesn't have to follow, which all that falls under HUD anyway, but the units don't have to follow. I would love to see residential have somewhat of a strict like ADA enforcement, but not as strict, because you know, you're not going to need a lot of what's required in the commercial aspect of it per unit. But when it comes to the residential aspect of it, that their codes have to be universal in design. Now, one of the biggest issues is that when the ADA was established, I'm getting out of residential here and going to commercial. When the ADA was established, there was a footprint that they had to follow. And I don't remember what it was, but by whatever X year, properties had to follow. But then you had this whole grandfather, or the property's grandfather, the property's grandfather, the property's grandfather. Okay, that's fine. Now you throw that into residential. Does that now mean that my next door neighbor has to convert their home ADA-wise? I think we need to focus from here going forward. Anything built from here going forward needs to follow guidelines. And for those like my property that have been converted, accessibility features, that there is some type of, through municipality or through county or state, I would probably say through more of municipality, that they're aware of what these features are. If I need to put a hot water heater in my home, I have to get a permit for it. Technically, in Coral Springs, if I want to put a satellite on my house, maybe DirecTV or Dish, I have to have a permit. But if I'm going to go put in a shower, roll-in shower, you're going to have likely a change in plumbing, change in electrical. You got to get permits. In doing so, some of these are noted. Mostly in the case that they're just electrical and plumbing. But it's not saying that the reason they got the electrical and plumbing is because they're adding a roll-in shower or they're winding the doors or whatever the case is. And now, for example, my house here in Coral Springs has a roll-in shower. We should have that on note, because the problem is that if I turn around and sell this home to, you know, someone that's coming down from New York because they want to be in sunny South Florida, there's no law that says that my roll-in shower has to continue being a roll-in shower. They can make that roll-in shower back to the original design in 1971, which was the bathtub. And they can put it back to the bathtub. So for me, forget this being my property, if I'm looking for real estate and I say, oh, wow, this one house in Coral Springs 2 years ago, I know it was selling because I had a roll-in shower. Now it's back up for sale because those that came from New York now want to leave Florida and go somewhere else. It's now back on the market, but I remember that property as a realtor. They had a roll-in shower, and the agent didn't take the pictures of the roll-in shower, but you know, took a picture of a toilet, and which is typical. But now I go to show the property, and I'm like, uh-oh, there was a roll-in shower here. Now it's a bathtub. I mean, how do we fix that problem? I really don't have a direct answer to it, but I think when the municipalities and the counties, especially the state of Florida, in this manner, can come together and say, listen, any type of construction that's being done that's putting features in, we need to note these features and we need to have a list of them. The county property appraiser appraises each property based on square footage, based on bedrooms and bathrooms. Why can't we have these extra features? I mean, you could go to the Broward County property appraiser and you could look, see what kind of roof I have. Is it shingle? Is it concrete? Do I have a pool deck? Do I have a pool? You know, what is the walls? What is the presumption of the plumbing? a lot of these things are there. Why can't we add this as an extra feature when it comes to accessibility?
I think that's a terrific idea right there. And if we do add those, there's the chance, I think it gets higher and higher as we go on, that people are going to, the value of the property is going to go up, at least for a good number of people, because of those features. So,
absolutely. I can tell you, working with individuals, one of the biggest thing is I just want to get my own place. But then the question is, when I get my place, how long do I have to wait with all the dust and everything so I can finally move in? And if those features are there, or at least some of the features are there, that provides them the quality of life, they would be so happy. For example, if there is a, let's say, wider door, there might be, you know, a step-in shower, but the toilet is not in its own little closet, so to speak, it has its own little door, that it's there for means for transfer. There's grab bars already behind the toilet, but there's just that little step into the shower. It's not a huge issue. You're basically just having to remove that little water barrier rather than having to rip out a bathtub, gutting the tile, gutting the wall, and going in there and redoing it with a pan and everything. You may have to redo it with the pan when you take the barrier down, but it's least minimal construction wise for that example than it is to say, all right, we found a good blueprint of a master bathroom. Now we just have to come and gut it. And it's going to take about 4 to 6 weeks, you know, between permit. Actually, it's going to take longer today because now I'm trying to find the workers to do it. But 4 to 6 weeks, you know, an average to do permitting to get someone to move in. And what I don't want to have to see, and I always state this in those type of scenarios, is don't live in the second bedroom, because with all the dust that's being filtered through the ventilation, you're going to breathe. You don't need that upper respiratory. You don't need to inhale a lot of that stuff. You need to stay where you're at. You need to be in a hotel. You need to, whatever the case is, let the construction go as it needs to be done. Let it get cleaned up post-construction, you know, post-construction cleaning, and then move in, rather than stay there while all this hazardous stuff is going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I also think we have, we're short on time here, but I find it interesting that if we study other cultures too, right? If you look at Japanese bathrooms, there's a higher percentage of them that do have roll-in showers. Because what they usually do is they shower first to get clean, and then they go and bathe to relax. So they actually have both in their bathrooms most of the time, even with their space constraints, even within all of those challenges, they still manage to do that. So I think we have a lot to learn. And if we can bring some of those design influences from other countries here, I think it would also help.
That's a good point. I never even knew that. I have to look into that. That's interesting. I mean, I know I've seen their toilets. You know, we have the closet, the toilet closet behind us when we sit on the toilet, whereas in Asian cultures, it's reversed. They're actually, you know, like they made fun of a couple of politicians that they had the computer on top of the closet and they were sitting on the toilet the wrong way. In other cultures there, that's actually how they use a toilet. You know, they got the closet in front of them where you got the flusher, and they're straddling it that way rather than sit around it with it being to their back.
Yep. Well, I think this has been a terrific conversation, and I would like to continue it. I really thank you, Ryan, for your time, for your candidness, for your willingness to share everything. My last question for you that I ask everybody is, what have I missed that you feel is really important to talk about?
Talking a little bit about yourself, because all I can see is from your shoulders up.
Talk a little bit about
next time. Yeah, next time tell us about where you're from and any type of disabilities or things that you've had challenges with.
Okay, absolutely. I will do that. Ryan, where can people find you? Where can people contact you if they want to reach out, if they want to hire you, if they want to get to know you better?
Absolutely. So my brokerage is Ryan Realty Group. The website is RyanSellsFlorida.com. So that's RyanSells, Florida, FLORIDA.com. And my email address is Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at RyanSellsFlorida.com. And my direct number is 954-696-7204.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you for the opportunity, Gustavo.